through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
It begins. It begins, people. No, not just our show today. Seahawks training camp, the 2020 season, officially underway. Day number one. I'm sure all the rookies have the jitters just like Jake Heaps did a couple of years ago. No, I'm just kidding. Jake never had the jitters. He was fully prepared. But everything getting going over at the VMAC today. We'll get into some of the things that are going to be going on there as they develop. Obviously, we are not over there like we normally would be. Every single August for the past 9 years, I've been over there. I love being over there. All the media, all the people, all of you guys, players, coaches, everybody. It's a wonderful experience, beautiful weather. And unfortunately, because of obvious circumstances, we are not out there this year. We will be giving you limited coverage. We will have some people over there. So don't think like we're going to be completely shut out. But yeah, things working much differently this year. But what we're going to do today is we're going to take the long view of 2020. How are we going to be able to judge, guys, if this season is a success? It seems like for the past couple of years, this team has been hanging in like football purgatory, right? You get 10-6, 9-7, 11-5. You're not dominating, but you're definitely a good team, and you feel like you've got a shot at it every single year. Maybe we win a playoff game, maybe we don't. But this year, we're hoping that things are different. So I think, guys, it goes without saying that success definitely has to include making the playoffs and probably winning a game. That's one thing. I think we're all going to agree on that. Now, for me, I think the development of younger players and finding and defining your next generation of stars, it's what's really important this year. There's a lot of new players, draft picks who are expected to come in and make an impact immediately. Quentin Dunbar, Jamal Adams, guys you acquired in the offseason to probably be here for a long time, at least a couple of years. Then there's other guys like Greg Olsen. He's here for probably a year and done. But Will Dissly, there's a lot of players who I think can be part of the long-term success here. That's what I'm concerned with. Obviously, if they go out, Jake, and they win a Super Bowl, yeah, we're going to call this year a success. Or if they get to the NFC Championship. But you know what? Sometimes I feel like this team... What's that?
I said, no, not satisfied by a Super Bowl win. It's got to be
not
two.
Satisfied. You got to win three. but I think sometimes it's possible that this team makes kind of a fluke run to the playoffs, and then come next year, it feels like we're starting all over again. And I don't think that's what we want. Much like the Mariners, we want to rebuild and keep this thing going and make sure that it can work for a long time. Players on this team are getting older. KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner, guys like that. So we need to define the next generation of stars. And of course, yes, Russell Wilson needs to play at an elite level and keep that going.
Now, the next generation of stars is great, and that's all fine and dandy, but you do have your superstars now in place, and they have a Super Bowl window that is designed for the next 3 to 4 years. And Pete Carroll, actually, this is a very interesting cut from Pete Carroll in 2019 during the season, just before the season started, talking about where he felt the state of the team and their roster was in terms of competing for Super Bowls. They might not be ready in 2019, but the following year, that's when he feels like it'd be taken.
This is a team that can win championships. This is that kind of team. It's just going to take us some time to grow into it. Maybe we can make this transition right now. That's what the idea is. We're doing it right now. There's no reason to wait. There's no reason to postpone. There's no reason. It's going to take some years of seasoning, but we'll see.
Now, that last part was important. It would be take some years of seasoning or year of seasoning. Now, obviously, they're competing to try and win a Super Bowl every year, and they felt like they had an opportunity to potentially do that. Now, the reality was they weren't, and part of that was some of your young players weren't ready to step up yet, and it was very heavily reliant on your star talent. But for me, in order for this team to take that next step and to go after and win a Super Bowl, and for this team to define this season as a success, to me is going to be determined by the adjustments that Pete Carroll and this coaching staff make during the 2020 season. It's going to be, they have the talent, guys. I'm concerned about the offensive line and the defensive line, but overall, they have a tremendous amount of talent, both on offense and defense, as you look at their roster right now. The offense, do they lean more into Russell Wilson? Does it need to, they need to make it the air raid, and they're throwing it 50 times a game, but are they allowing him to be the last line of defense at the line of scrimmage and using him to determine the tempo and pick up the pace of this offense? Are they giving him more opportunities to help this offense be more efficient on first and second down? To me, that's an adjustment that this offensive staff can make. Can the defensive side of the ball get their dominant presence back? And that also can be held not just through their talent, not through personalities, but in the style in which they play. And that's part of not sitting back in soft zone and playing more man-to-man match zone principles. Not limiting Jamal Adams' role to just simply strong safety, but using him as a chess piece all around the field to really cause problems for the opposing offense. To me, if they make those type of adjustments as a coaching staff and they grow with the talent that they have, I believe that it'll help get them to an NFC championship and a possibility of going to the Super Bowl. That's what I would define as success. Making adjustments, showing that they're changing, that they're adapting with their personnel, and that they are also taking one step forward by getting to an NFC championship game.
I think adjustments are important, Jake. The key for me is going to be improvements from young players, specifically from players on defense. And I say this because it's not enough to just adjust your passing game, open it up for Russell Wilson, and let him play. I'm going to point to the Kansas City Chiefs for an example here. I think there's this misconception that the Chiefs' defense is really bad, but because the offensive coordinator and the head coach of the Chiefs open it up for Patrick Mahomes, they get to a Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, and they play these stellar games. Turns out the Kansas City Chiefs, yes, they were bad against the run, but they were the eighth best team in limiting passing yards from opposing quarterbacks as far as yardage over the course of the season. They were better than the Bears, the Cowboys, the Broncos, the Rams, the Panthers, a team that led the league in sacks. And they were also about 14 or 15 in yards per play. They're not a bad defense. You can't be a Super Bowl winning team with a bad defense. I think that narrative is a false one. And I think that with how good Patrick Mahomes is, it's easy to say that he alone is carrying that team, and he's not. You need development from other players around that person, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. That's what the Seahawks need this year. The players I want to see a step forward from are Rasheem Green, LJ Collier. On offense, it would be great to see something from Rashad Penny, but I think even a healthy Chris Carson makes that blow a little bit easier. But you want to see a step forward on defense. The Leo competition that we're talking about this year, who's going to bring the pressure? All of that's important. So that's why I think improvement from young players, particularly on defense, is the key this year.
Okay, let's say everything we just laid out, guys, the stuff that I laid out, finding your next group of stars, the stuff that Jake laid out, making adjustments on defense, making sure point differential isn't 7 again, and then what Stacey just pointed out there, you actually get development from some of your younger players, whether it's this year's draft picks or some of the guys that are already here. Let's say they do all of that, but they don't reach the NFC Championship. They don't get any further than they have the last couple of years. Is the season a success then? You guys think among yourselves real quick. I'm going to just say right now, I think it is. I'm taking the long view of this organization for like the next 4 years. I don't think that they have to win the Super Bowl this year. If everything you guys just laid out takes shape and actually happens, I think they're going to be good for like 4 years, and they will have that shot at the Super Bowl. It doesn't necessarily have to happen this year. It may seem disappointing at the end of this year if they get into the second round again and lose, and I won't blame any fan for being upset if that happens, but just know you won't be going into 2021 feeling like you have to rebuild again if you found your next generation of stars and guys do develop and you don't have offensive line problems and the coaches actually have showed willingness to adjust. If all that stuff happens, I think you're good to go. I don't think that it matters that much. But you know what? For God's sakes, get to the NFC Championship.
Now, Tom, I actually do agree with what you said there, but it's going to have to depend on the feel. It's going to have to depend on the feel of how things are turning. If it's going to be the same old story of what we've seen with this defense in terms of them playing a little bit more conservatively, if we're seeing really any adjustments on offense, we're seeing the same story pop up again and again and mistakes again and again, and they have an exit early out of the playoffs. To me, that will be disappointing. That will be concerning moving forward. But if they are adjusting, it does bring you some light at the end of the tunnel that maybe they are that close. The problem is, guys, is that a lot of these players on this team right now, whether they're veteran or whether they're young players, are essentially on one-year deals right now. That you have a bunch of vets who are on one-year deals. You have a bunch of players who have grown up in your program that will be seeking a new contract the next season. So there's a lot of uncertainty when you look at this current roster in 2020 to where it will be in 2021. And they'll have a lot of work cut out for them, as John and Pete will. So on the flip side of that, you have a lot of sure things right now. And I believe that this team and this organization and this coaching staff really truly feels like they have the stuff, the talent, to be able to go after this thing right now. And I don't think anybody else should have any other expectations than that. And it's going to come down to how this ultimately looks and feels and the adjustments that are made. Do they get the presence back? But I think all those things are wrapped into one. So that's why it's hard to determine what a successful season is. But for me, I think they have everything in place to be able to get to an NFC Championship game and get to a Super Bowl. And anything below that, unless there's some drastic changes, it's going to be really hard to make me feel good about not getting to that point.
Yeah. So like I said, the key to success is development of young players, particularly on defense. The outcome of what that success and development looks like, the measure of success to me, is getting to at least an NFC conference game or an NFC championship game. I know that sounds like a lot. And if I was listening to myself, I'd say, Stacey, first of all, the best team in the league doesn't always get there. Look at the Baltimore Ravens. They have the league MVP. We're one of the most productive offenses in the league, had a pretty solid defense. They didn't even get through the divisional round. Lost to a team that they were favored against. What are you talking about? But look, if you get through 2022, that's when John Schneider's contract runs through, Pete Carroll's contract runs through 2021. If you get to 2023, the final year of Russell Wilson's contract, and I believe Bobby Wagner's contract, are you going to look back if they never got back to an NFC championship or a Super Bowl and think that this talent was wasted? Not just talent at quarterback, yes, talent on both sides of the ball, and stability in a front office that no other team, not just in your division, but few teams around the league had. They didn't take advantage of a kind of chemistry that's rare in the NFL to keep for that period of time. Not only do I think that you'll say that was a disappointment and it's disheartening to see that, I think it's also not especially common to see that. I think that teams that have that kind of talent at quarterback, at head coach, at GM, on defense, usually get back to a championship game. The Seahawks have yet to do that, even though they have the talent to do it.
We'll get to three questions here in a second. I just want to talk about something. You brought up the Ravens there. They were 14-2 and the number one seed in their conference. It's different when you're the number one or even number two seed because you get the bye. Now, this year they're going to expand the playoffs, right? So forget about the two seed. If you're the one seed and you don't get to the conference championship, that is a serious disappointment because what it means is you had to play one less game and you had a home game and you still couldn't get there. That would be a disaster. Now, granted, there's not going to be any fans at CenturyLink Field this year, so it's a little bit different, but still, if you get a home game and you get one less game than everybody else and you don't make the NFC Championship, that'll be a serious disappointment. If you're a wild card team, though, and you got to win two games on the road first, that's a little bit different. And that's where the Seahawks, unfortunately, have been stuck the last couple of years. Right now, three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
I don't know how many of you guys out there watched that hockey game yesterday afternoon, but the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Tampa Bay Lightning went to five overtimes where the Tampa Bay Lightning were victorious. Five overtimes. I'm thinking to myself, how are these guys not passing out face first on the ice? I started wondering which sport has the best conditioned athletes. Not the toughest, although I guess you got to be mentally tough to be doing that, or really in any sport. But which sport has the best physically conditioned athletes, Stacey?
Man.
Swimmers?
Whew. I'm biased here
they're
because I
there.
Was a swimmer, so they're definitely up
they
there.
They are, absolutely.
Let
they
me tell you what, as someone who did the fly too, that will push you to the limit. You're going to feel like you're drowning. Okay. I think it's between hockey players and NFL players. I think, again, I'm biased with the NFL players too because you go into the locker room, we obviously won't this year, but you go in to interview players after a game and guys are like cutting tape off their fingers, their socks are bloody. It really takes a toll on your body that I don't think every fan gets to see. So yeah, I'm going to say between hockey players and football players, honorable mention swimmers.
I really do believe that swimmers is up there. Hockey is definitely up there with the physical toll that they take and everything that they're doing on the ice, constantly going back and forth. Soccer, I agree with your list, Stacey. The one other sport that I would propose is rugby. Those guys never stop. They're always hitting each other. I mean, that sport is insane, and you've got to be pretty dang conditioned to be able to survive playing rugby.
Yeah, I think...
Look, to play any sport professionally, I think you've got to be in pretty darn good shape.
At the end of the day, everyone's in great shape. Like, maybe in different ways. Like soccer players... The condition your heart and lungs have to be in, like just your cardiovascular system, I can't fathom.
Right. Or if you're a cross-country runner, a marathon runner, whatever, you're an Olympian, you know, something like that. I think swimming's got to be way up there. And you know, in fact, when I was in high school, I had this one friend who, like, he wrestled, played football, baseball, swam. He always said that swimming was the one that beat him up the most. Now, the battering that you take as an NFL player, I think is something that maybe other than rugby is something that other athletes just don't quite experience. So I'm actually going to give the nod to NFL players. But man, swimming, that butterfly, that used to kill me. Next.
Number two.
By the way, when I say it used to kill me, I was never
gymnast.
On the swim team.
Yeah.
They're in terrific condition, but they don't have to have great endurance, do they?
Maybe not, but you look at Simone Biles, like she's got to be like 0% body fat. I know that's not physically possible, but every single muscle on her body has to function in a perfectly coordinated time.
Now we're talking about something different. Conditioning to me was just like them, like who, when you talk about conditioning, it's like cardio. Like, who has to have the best cardio, the best lung capacity, right? Those types of things. With gymnastics, I mean, the shape that they're in, the most athletic.
The control you have to have.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I'll go you one better than gymnast. Figure skaters. What those people do in the air is insane.
Not
on ice,
better.
By the way. Figure skaters.
No, gymnasts.
Gymnasts over figure skaters.
In better shape than gymnasts.
No.
Take it to the bank, Jake. Take it to the bank.
You die on
that. All
right, hill.
I'm going to skip
ahead.
I'm going to skip over one.
I'll be broke. I'll be broke taking it to that bank.
Yeah, you will be. All right, I'm going to skip over one here. Every quarterback has a down year somewhere in their career. Even if that year is still good, like it's still lesser than, you know, every other year. Can Russell afford to do that? We heard an interesting debate on the Brock and Salk podcast. We'll go ahead and roll cut two.
Russell Wilson was ranked the second best player by his peers in this league for his play in 2019.
if they're going to win their division, he's got to be that same kind of player in 2020. He's got to play exquisite ball, continue to be the incredible player that he has been, durable, reliable, tough as nails.
That's weak. Russell's
got to play at that level if they're going to win the NFC West.
No, duh. That one doesn't count. Of course Russell has to play well. That's a storyline you're watching? Can Russell play well? No kidding.
With no offseason?
Dude, it's Russell Wilson, and he's with a band of merry men. Like, of course he's got to play well.
Salk may think that that's too obvious to even bring up, but it is the most important thing. I'm with Brock on this one. I don't think that you can ever take for granted that Russell's going to go out there and have the same year or better that he's already had. Now, I don't see any signs of him all of a sudden regressing, but you never know. I mean, he might get hurt. He might go out there, have tip passes, intercepts. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen with him? So I think, number one, absolutely, Russell Wilson cannot afford to regress, Jake.
I need to put that sound of Michael Clark Duncan in Talladega Nights. Don't you put that on us, Tom Wassel, okay? I don't want to hear Russell Wilson regressing, okay? We worked too hard in the offseason for that to happen, okay? Now, it is important. It is a factor because this team is so reliant on Russell Wilson being the biggest eraser, the biggest, most important player to his team, right? You could argue that he is the MVP of his team every single year. Not the offensive player of the year, but the actual MVP, most valuable player. So he has to be on his A game every single Sunday. And I agree. You can't take that for granted.
I love my guy Brock Ewer, but to me this is like saying, well, health is the number one factor. Well, yeah. I mean, health is incredibly important, and I would argue a skill that you can have too. But it's like, obviously Russell Wilson has to be that guy. I think that the only way I'll disagree with this outside of that is to say that it shouldn't just be on Russell Wilson, and I don't think Russell Wilson playing well is enough for them to go all the way.
No, but it's still essential.
Well,
it's like taking the engine out of your car. If that's not working, you're not going on that road trip.
Yeah, but if the question is, how do you make your car better? Your answer can't be, put an engine in it.
No, but you got to make sure that engine is in tip-top shape.
That's right.
No, I think the question has to be,
if you don't have that engine ready to roll.
If you're saying tip-top shape, the equivalent of that would be like, okay, Russell's got to get better at his release. Like, how do you improve it? Don't make sure the engine's there. The engine's
Stacey,
there already.
What's the first thing you do
before you go on a road trip?
You get an oil change to make sure everything's running.
No, you get snacks. You add to it. You add to the experience. You bring in an all-pro safety. You find like a fun wide receiver, bring him in. You get Cheez-Its. You get Gatorade. You don't make sure you have an engine. You think I check to make sure my car still has my engine before I leave for work? No, Tom. No.
Speaking of snacks, can we get the actual snacks, Damon Harrison?
It's a good question.
Like,
I think that's still part of this plan.
Yeah. All right. We're going to have Mike Salk in here next. And we'll ask him about that cut. I probably won't ask him about figure skating. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Okay, you just heard us roll that cut there from the Brock and Salk podcast. By the way, you can find that podcast at brockandsalkpodcast.com. Mike and Brock were debating, or I think discussing, the keys to success this year. Go ahead and roll it again.
Russell Wilson was ranked the second best player by his peers in this league for his play in 2019. If they're going to win their division, he's got to be that same kind of player in 2020. He's got to play exquisite ball, continue to be the incredible player that he has been, durable, reliable, tough as nails.
That's weak. Russell's got to play at that level
if they're going to win the NFC West.
No, duh. That one doesn't count. Of course Russell has to play well. That's a storyline you're watching? Can Russell play well? No kidding.
With no offseason?
Dude, it's Russell Wilson, and he's with a band of merry men. Like, of course he's got to play well.
Mike, It may not be sexy, but I don't think we can afford to take that for granted. What do you think?
Well, fair, but if it doesn't happen, our conversations are going to be real different about what we think the Seahawks' limits might be. I mean, I almost have to take it for granted. Russell Wilson has to play at or near an MVP level in order for this team to be good. That's true of all elite quarterbacks. It's true of Drew Brees. It's true of Tom Brady. It used to be true of Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers or Pat Mahomes or whoever it is you want to throw in the list. If those guys don't play at MVP caliber level, whether they get MVP votes or not, their teams aren't going anywhere. That's sort of a truism in the NFL. And once you have a quarterback who's at that level, not one of the guys you're hoping can get to that level. If we're having this conversation on WFAN in New York and we're trying to determine, hey, can the Jets be a good team this year? Well, it depends how well their young quarterback plays, right? Is he going to get over the hump? Can Sam Darnold contribute the way an elite quarterback does? That's a different conversation. But if you're in one of the markets where your quarterback has already achieved elite status, and in this case was named the number two player in all the NFL, yeah, I better assume that that's going to happen. Russell's got all the ability. He's shown the experience. I'm expecting Russell Wilson to play at that level.
Now, I'm going to go a little off topic here because we just got some breaking news here. The 49ers are signing all-pro tight end George Kittle to a massive contract, 6 years, $94.8 million. It's a little under $16 million per year. He gets 50% of his contract guaranteed and a $25 million signing bonus. Huge contract, game-changing contract for tight ends. What's your initial reaction to that as you look at the 49ers and the way they're building?
How old is he?
George Kittle? That's a good question. I'm not sure right off the top of my head. But
I guess like 24, 25.
Yeah,
25.
Still young. He's 26 years old. He's 26.
He's 26. So it's kind of interesting. Okay, let's take that look. So he'll play this season at 26. That's kind of when the injury started to catch up with Rob Gronkowski. And not that they're the exact same player, but sort of the other premier tight end in the NFL before Kittle was Gronk. And you look at it and say, all right, his age 26 season, he played 15 games, but then the next year was the year he played 8. And in fact, he never played even as much as 15 games again after that. He played 14, he played 13, so it's not like he got no value. He still played in a lot of games, but he was not the same player. After that point, his yards per reception started to drop after the next season. His numbers kind of dropped in general and tailed off after that. So, look, he's a really good player. I understand that they want to build around a George Kittle. He's got the personality they want, his ability to fit with their offense in both the run blocking and the pass reception. I mean, he is a perfect San Francisco 49er player in that offense. Tight ends tend to take a bit of a beating. Now, you know, you get the Tony Gonzalez's in there who get to play forever and ever and seemingly are magic and just, you know, pliable. But that's a position that takes so much abuse. I guess that I would have a little bit of concern with that level of investment there.
I want to get back to the conversation about Russell Wilson. I agree with you that it's kind of a given. So you need to look at the other parts of the team that need to improve, and that Russell Wilson being great isn't going to be enough anyway. What was one of the areas then that you gave your answer to in response to Brock?
In terms of the storylines that we're watching this year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, again, Russell Wilson can't be a storyline anymore. I'm curious whether or not his weaponry is enough. I know Jake has asked about it over and over again. I think if DK is healthy, if Lockett is healthy, the weaponry is probably there. But if either one of those guys get hurt, how thin are they weapon-wise without an Antonio Brown or any of the other kind of conversations we've had in the offseason, without drafting anybody highly at the wide receiver position, with a tight end who is well on the other side of his career here, and Disley who's had injury issues, you know, what does the weaponry look like? And it leads to another question about the running back room. What's the health of that room? Right? I mean, we love Chris Carson. He's had a lot of problems staying healthy over the last few years. I love Rashad Penny. I think there's a lot of ability there. He's going to start the year on the PUP list. I like Carlos Hyde, pretty good player at times, and even in the last few years, but he's on his, I believe, fifth team in the last 4 years. So, you know, I think there's a major question on the skill position front. considering how important that running back spot is to the Seahawks and the style of offense they want to run, you don't need to have the best running back in the league to do it, but we also saw how troubling it was when it was Eddie Lacy and others like that who just were completely incapable of hitting a hole quickly enough to run Pete Carroll's balanced offense that he's interested in running. So I think you've got some questions there in terms of weaponry. And then, you know, the thing I'll probably be looking at the most as they head into training camp is how are they going to utilize all these interesting pieces on defense? They get a lot of guys who play the same position, sometimes too many. How are you going to use your four safeties? How are you going to use your five cornerbacks? How are you going to use your four or five linebackers, all of whom you want to get on the field? So how creative do you need to be defensively and with your personnel to try to get some of your best players on the field in interesting situations? I think that's something we'll be watching right from the beginning. I expect when Jake walks over to practice every day to see what's happening, one of the things he'll come back with is Marquise Blair was being used in this way. Jamal Adams was being used in that way. They found a way to get Ugo Amadi and Marquise Blair on the field at the same time by doing such and such. I think that's a huge challenge and a great opportunity this year for the Seahawks coaching staff.
At the risk of belaboring this point, I just want to come at it a different way. Isn't it possible that very few of those other things that we're talking about can go right, like they all go wrong? They have a bad defense like they did last year, and Russell's the only thing that goes well, and that's the reason they win. That's the that's why I don't think you can take it for granted. We can list all this other stuff and have all that go wrong, but if Russell plays well, then they'll probably still get to the playoffs. That's why you can't leave it out of the conversation.
Well, I guess it's a fair point you make, Tom. I think in some ways we're saying the same thing, but from different directions. Yeah, you're right. If everything else goes wrong, they're no better than they were a year ago, and Russell Wilson plays otherworldly and they get to the playoffs again, we're not going to learn anything other than Russell Wilson is a great player, which we already know, and they've got a serious problem. I think at that point, they're going to have a really tough conversation about what their personnel looks like and how they're going to find a way to move it forward. As far as I'm concerned, achieving what they did last year isn't enough. You got Russell Wilson in the prime of his career. I expect him to have another great season. That is a given for me. If it doesn't happen and you get worse, you got even bigger fish to fry because it's going to expose to all of the problems that you have elsewhere on the roster. If Russell does have a good season, then you need some of those other pieces to have improved in order to get better than you were a year ago. And I don't think where they were a year ago was good enough. It was fun. It was a good ride. They won a playoff game. But, you know, watching their starting defensive end and Ziggy Ansah get outrun by Coy Detmer, whoever it was, quarterback, that's not good enough. Sorry, it was a McCown, not a Detmer. But they're the same thing. It doesn't matter. Like, that stuff's not good enough. You need to improve. So Russell Wilson playing well is just, for me, a basis point. And everything else is about how they can incrementally improve in order to get farther in the playoffs and get back to the real goal here, which is to win a Super Bowl.
Mike, in 30 seconds or less, that 5-overtime hockey game yesterday was nuts. Where do hockey players rank among the best-conditioned athletes?
Really, really high. It was awesome to watch. I came home and just flipped it on, ended up watching about, I turned it in. I was in the 4th overtime and ended up watching till the end. They're incredibly highly conditioned, but in a different way, right? Because they're constantly coming on and off the ice. They get a couple of minutes to rest, and then they got to go back out there. But when they're out there, it's exhausting. You ever been on skates and tried to skate the way they do, as hard as they do, up and down? And it's so hard. It's so exhausting. They are
not for 5 hours.
Remarkably, it's hard for 2 shifts. That they do that for as long as they do is truly a remarkable feat. And I think some of it is their conditioning, Tom, but some of it is just their willpower. If you've been around hockey players, you know just how stubbornly competitive they are as a group, and their ability to just say, I don't care how tired I am, I'm going to find a way to dig deep, I think is possibly unparalleled in team sports.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. See ya.
All right, is pass rush as important as it was about a month and a half ago? We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
A reminder, Seahawks training camp is here, and it's time for two-a-days on 710 ESPN Seattle. Starting August 17th, join us each weekday for exclusive access to training camp with a daily roundtable from 11 a.m. to noon featuring John Clayton and our Seahawks experts, and then your chance to interact with 710 hosts on a live video chat each afternoon on Instagram Live. 710 ESPN Seattle is your all-access pass to Seahawks training camp with two-a-days starting August 17th. Okay, Stacey, you've been doing a terrific job putting up training camp questions up at 710sports.com. We went through the third wide receiver yesterday and something else the day before. I forget what it was. Forgive me. Today, defensive end, pass rush. Now, pass rush is something we talked about endlessly through the first couple months of the offseason. Jadeveon Clowney, who are they going to get? They bring in a couple of guys we'll go through in a second. Bruce Irvin, Benson Mayoa, etc. What do we got right now? Jamal Adams is here. A secondary much improved. I'll start there.
Mm-hmm.
Just the secondary and the level of talent that we have back there with what's expected of them. Diggs, Dunbar, Adams, Griffin. Does that maybe diminish a little bit of the urgency, the panic over the lack of pass rush on this team?
I think it gives you a little bit of wiggle room, but you don't want to lean on coverage sacks, for instance, to replace any production in your pass rush. You want to be able to still have someone who can effectively get off the edge, get to the quarterback, you know, get quarterbacks in some uncomfortable situations and force some of those mistakes. So having someone like Jamal Adams who can get sacks and who can also, along with Quandre Diggs, create some coverage sacks, meaning there's just nowhere for the quarterback to go. That was really evident in, I believe, week 12. Jake can correct me, week 12 against the Eagles when they had quite a few of those. So again, it helps, but you still need to find your edge rusher. Now, specifically, the spot they were looking at is that Leo edge rusher. We throw that word around a lot, but basically they're looking to replace who Frank Clark was for them. You need someone that's going to get the majority of your sacks, that's going to be your premier edge rusher, maybe your speediest defensive lineman, the guy that's going to get to the quarterback. This is the guy you're paying money to. So they aren't paying money, a lot of money, to anyone right now. Rather, they've got, I'd say, four guys that are really competing at that spot with a focus on three of them. And then they've got some other guys kind of in the mix. So, again, for the purpose of this article, which you can find on 710sports.com, and to reiterate, these are going to be a series of five articles leading up to August 17th when we're going to launch two-a-days on 710 ESPN Seattle. Jake's going to be part of that, by the way, so our coverage on this show and station is going to continue. But this is looking specifically at that spot. So if you're hearing it and you're thinking, well, Jaron Reed's got to get some sacks and Rasheem Green's got to get some sacks and LJ Collier's got to take a step forward, yes, but this is focusing on a very specific part of the defensive line. So with that, the four guys I focused on were Benson Mayoa, the person that they brought in. He and Bruce Irvin are both in their second stints with the Seahawks. Bruce Irvin can and probably will make some appearances at strong side linebacker, but he can also play in a more traditional defensive end role at this kind of Leo spot. So I'm including him in this competition. But Benson Mayoa is going to be in there. Had seven sacks last year with the Raiders. That was the most sacks he's ever had in a single season. I know Jake has highlighted that that's not anything to lean on because in, I think, at least four other seasons, he's had, you know, one, two, or fewer. But he has been pretty good the past 2 years with pressures. So he didn't have seven sacks with the Cardinals in 2018, but he had 11 quarterback hits, which were second only to Chandler Jones. So he's in the mix. You've got then the two rookies, Daryl Taylor and Alton Robinson. Those guys are also competing at that spot. Daryl Taylor, I think there's going to be more of a focus on him, which isn't surprising because he was taken 48th overall, and he's got a lot of burst, a lot of stuff that you would want to see. Jim Nagy, Jake, I know you remember this. We had Jim Nagy, who's an ESPN analyst, current Senior Bowl director. He was on with us as speaking from the point of view of a former scout, a former SEC scout for the Seahawks. And he said that Daryl Taylor reminds him a lot of Frank Clark and is kind of a perfect Seahawk. So I think that's someone to really, really keep an eye on in that competition. I wouldn't expect him to like start with the first team on day one of training camp with padded practices, but I think he'll certainly get some reps in there once he is off the non-football injury list. I saw some questions when we first announced this news about him being on the non-football injury list. As an answer to that, I think that it's precautionary. He had surgery to repair a stress fracture in his leg in January, so I think the team is taking it safe with him. So you may not see him be as active early in camp, but I think he's going to be very much a part of that competition once he's off that list. And then last but not least is Alton Robinson, who had a little bit of a down year in his final year at Syracuse, but had 10 sacks the year before that. And Jim Nagy was really high on him. He said he can win with speed, win with power, and he's got really nice get off. He also plays very long, something Pete Carroll loves with defensive linemen, is when they can really, really lengthen, get long arms, bat down balls, break through tackles. So I think that he's another kind of promising prospect there.
I can't wait to get out on the practice field and to be able to watch these guys, to be able to see them up close and see how they're working, how they're being moved and utilized, because Bruce Irvin absolutely is going to be your Sam linebacker in most situations in regards to when they play base defense. Then he'll be utilized in nickel personnel as either your Leo or the other defensive end, because you don't play with a five technique when you're in nickel personnel. It changes the style in which your defensive line, how they're shaped or shaded across your defensive line. So he'll be one of the two guys on the edge at that point. But these two young players, along with Benson Mayoa, to me are the big ones to watch for, because Benson Mayoa, he has not been a consistent player in this league. He had 7 sacks last year, which was his career high, which is what you're hoping he does close to this year. But he has been all over the map in terms of his production, and I think it also has been determined on the quality of defensive lines that he's played on. The better defensive lines he's played on, the better production he has given. So that's something to give it to keep an eye on. Alton Robinson, Daryl Taylor, I hate when rookies show up to training camp injured. It's just really difficult as a rookie to show up to training camp and play and expect them to get up to speed quickly without any issues, a la LJ Collier last year, right? He missed a significant amount of time, and look at the season that he had last year. Daryl Taylor, extremely talented, but if you don't see him get into the mix soon, I'm gonna start to get very concerned. And Alton Robinson was a guy that I targeted before the draft even came about as a player that I would love to see the Seahawks select in the late rounds. They did, and I think he's going to be a really nice rotational piece with how twitchy he is, how great of a get off he has. I think he'll be able to produce and play right away, even as a 5th round pick.
I think that's a point we may need to come back to at some point during training camp, just depending on who we see healthy out there and who ends up getting hurt. You know, somebody's going to get hurt, whether it's, hopefully it's not a young player, like you said. But you're right. That just sets them back so, so much. Before we run here, let's hear from Pete Carroll talking about how Daryl Taylor came to them. Cut 3.
Yeah, but I'll go back up to, you know, getting Daryl. That was a big deal because we thought maybe we had missed our chance, you know, in the sense that, and we really wanted to get him on, you know, in the rush group. And so when we were able to, you know, hang through it and get him, that was a big pick for us. I mean, as we go down the list, you know, every guy had kind of had something special to him. But then again, I was really surprised at Alton was still there. Because he could be a big help for our football team.
All right, talking about Taylor and Alton Robinson there. Did you have one more thing you wanted to add?
Yeah, just one tiny thing I want to add at the end. So I did not add anything about Everson Griffin or Clay Matthews or Jadeveon Clowney to this article because they obviously are not on the Seahawks roster. But an important note that I want fans to pay attention to is that, according to Ian Rappaport, the NFL has lifted its ban on essentially tryouts at team headquarters. So like in-person meetings, physicals, things like that. It was a ban that they put in place almost immediately at the beginning of kind of COVID when all of this started. So for months, players haven't been able to actually go to facilities and see people. So some of those guys that are still on the market, like Clay Matthews or Everson Griffin or Clowney, who are older or coming off an injury, will be able to visit with the team. So you could see maybe an addition at this spot in the coming weeks.
All right, we talked about the pass rush. What's going to define success for the team this year, and can we afford to take Russell Wilson for granted? Danny O'Neill will join us to discuss those things next. 710 ESPN Seattle.